Chris, when you were getting going in the 80s in your career in football down at LSU, and just to put this in context, today officially the one-time freebie transfer becomes the rule. What were transfers like back then? Do you remember anything specific about a player or two?
Well, there were always a few players that that just maybe they didn't fit in. They were struggling academically, you know, or they were not able to pan out on the football field, or maybe socially they were having trouble, they were homesick, or just whatever.
Right.
They're handled very individually, and you always looked out, the best case for them. You always tried to find a place for them, and but it really depended, Bill. It was very individual. So, you know, a lot of guys want to transfer. They're frustrated. Most of these guys come from being their best player on their high school team, one of them at least, to, you know, they're it's a lot tougher. Things came easier. It's tougher to do it. It's people can relate. Sometimes just students, right? You know, it comes easy in high school. Got to work harder, and it's harder. And they're not having as much success. The first instinct is I'm going back home. I'm quitting. I'm whatever. And look, you got to know the kid, and sometimes you got to prevent them from making a big mistake, a one that they're going to regret a month later, and it's too late. So it was very individualized in what I think we have gone to. It is the opposite of that, in that you've got scholarship limits, which we had scholarship limitations then too, but now it's more about everyone says, oh, well, let the kid go. Let him do what he wants. It's the freedom. The kid is going to get the shaft in the end, because most of them are not going to, and they're not the ones that you would talk about a lot on a show like this.
Right.
Most of them that are not real good are not going to have a place to go, a landing spot. And then the other thing is, here's the little, you know, you want to peek behind the curtain, folks, here's what really happens. You know, players A, B, and C, not quite cutting it. You're going to call them in and say, you know, you're going to want their scholarships back. And so you're going to push them out the door. And so you're hearing that they're transferring. Yeah, they're transferring. Sometimes they're basically being told, we don't have a spot for you here. And they will make calls for you, maybe at a lower level than what we are. And, you know, that's the dirty little secret. Back in my day, you never would dream of doing that. You could not own up to a scholarship for a player. Or there's no way in heck you're going back to that high school again. Because you just now it's understandable. It is, you go, you don't like it, you can leave, you can come and go, no real commitment. That's not a big issue today. In fact, Bill, you know this, it used to be if you made an offer to a kid, if for some reason you decided to offer a kid as a junior, which everybody does it now, but back then it was very rare, and something quite didn't happen, you honored that offer because you couldn't go back into that high school again. Now, I mean, you make an offer on Monday. On Wednesday, you can rescind it. They can do the same. It mirrors society, doesn't it? There's no real commitment to anything, and that's where we're headed. And it's not – I think people are so naive to think it's going to benefit the player. Oh, it may benefit some here or there. Overall, look, if you're not cutting it, to the degree, but you're working hard, you're a good student, you do all the right things, you're not quite good enough, it's like pro ball, man. You know, we're going to move on, and we're going to take another bite at the apple and give these other young guys a chance, because you know what? You're already a junior. You're not really helping us even in the depth role. We're going to go and use that scholarship somewhere else, and that's what's happening, and it's going to happen more and more.
Coach C over in South Carolina brought this up earlier. I wasn't even thinking about it. It was a tweet from the UCF football account, and it says, take a look at the future. And, Chris, it's football players at UCF in their uniforms, I guess on the field, and on the back where you would have Landry or King, the name, it's at Billis King. Or at Landry Football, or at Crazy Charlie 615. That's what they're saying we're about to see. on the back of the jersey, the Twitter account of players.
Yeah, it's going to all look like a Maryland football helmet. You're not going to quite figure out what you can't. It's going to look like a NASCAR. You know, it's just, yeah, no, it's. I don't know. Is that where it's going to go? That's. Now tell me somebody wants to see that at a traditional school to take the, for example, the historical, maybe some people call it boring Penn State blue, Penn State white, and you start putting stuff on that. That's what they do in European soccer. I mean, they seem to have, you know, Adidas and then like 10 other things on there that, you know, I don't know what they are, but they're sponsored. I think it's the unintended consequences on a lot of this. They don't think things through enough. They're very reactive, not proactive, and it's I'm going to stop because it's one of my frustrations about college football. And I know it's college athletics as a whole, but college football, it's so poorly organized and it's so poorly reactive and lacking in visionary component to it to where they just dig themselves into a rabbit hole, got to come out, and they go into another. It's just a lot of this stuff. Look, the concept of players get a lot, I do think that people don't realize that there's not as much money as you think because people only track and pay attention to the money that comes into an athletic department. They have no clue what goes out. They have no clue what it costs to run a tennis program, a golf program, a swimming program. And all of that's money out the door. That's like, you know, throwing it out in a hurricane. And you ain't good, go find it. You ain't ever going to find it again. It's just the way it is. I remember Joe Dean coming into my office, as he often did, God rest his soul. And I was looking at tape, and he'd just come, and he'd just watch. He wouldn't say anything. Comes in one day, and he's just shaking his head. And he just, and I said, what's up, JoJo? We used to call him JoJo. And I'm going to clean this up. And he said, well, I'll tell you what's up. I'm about to take the phone from my bleepity-bleep tennis coach and rip it out the wall. I said, what's up? He's, you know, and he's going through spending like $900,000 going to Peru to recruit tennis players. And I remember the tennis, and this is like in the 80s, Bill, spending like $1.1 million on something in track. And we're not talking about facilities. We're talking about money. We're talking about traveling. We're talking about scholarships. We're talking about food. All that stuff adds up. We're 2021. The costs are that much more. Yes, the income is that much more with television contracts, but it doesn't add up. It doesn't add up as much. And the players get a lot. Maybe there's things that you can do to increase the stipend a little bit. But yeah, where we're going, it's so many people that make comments on this stuff that really have no clue, have never been a part of an athletic department, and they don't realize that this is not pro sports, where if you bring in money as an NFL team, as an NBA team, that's all you got to account for is that team. You're not paying for, you know, the other sports teams that don't make money in the league. Can you imagine that? That's the worst business model ever. But that's what college athletics is due to Title IX. And, you know, I remember when Title IX in the early 80s, because this was President Nixon's deal, I remember being told, wait, you think it's happening. Wait another decade or so, and you're going to see what the effect of Title IX. Well, that was in the 80s. And in the 90s, it started to kick in. 2021, it's full-blown inferno now.
Tennis coach spending hundreds of thousands, if not more, on recruiting at Purdue.
I'm going to rip that phone out the wall, Kramer. Jerry Simmons is the guy, and he was like, he always couldn't understand. He got tennis players.
Wow.
Oh, God. And we did. We had more players from Peru and all of that stuff, and Jerry just thought, because Bob Broadhead hired him and said, you're going to make you the best tennis program in the country. That was Bob's thing, you know. And when Bob Broadhead left, God rest his soul, we were so much in the red. It was unbelievable. There's so much money lost. And Joe was hired for one reason, to get the money back in order. Different world, man, different world.
And most everybody, if they're old enough to remember, they only think Joe Dean was a basketball commentator.
That's right. He was correct. String music, you know, was his thing. And back in the day, when this was, you know, pre and even post ESPN cable. So, like, if you were in, you know, this, we just put the tournament to bed. Back in the day when you didn't have ESPN, you didn't have cable, you watch college basketball, you might get it a little bit on the weekend, and we'd get a weeknight game. It used to be on a Wednesday night, and it was syndicated. I believe it was Jerry Reinsdorf's company, maybe the White Sox Bulls guy. I think he put together TBS, I believe, or whatever they called it. It was kind of like
Jefferson Pilot?
No, Jefferson Pilot is the same thing, but another company. This
right.
was Reinsdorf. Maybe he owned TBS, too. I don't know. I think Jefferson Pilot was a North Carolina base or something. I could be wrong.
Right,
whatever.
Right.
Same concept. But Joe did it, and Joe did it initially with John Ferguson, who used to be the voice of LSU sports back in the day. And he did it for a while, and then they put him with some other folks. I think Tom Hammond, and you know that you used to watch. You know, that was appointment viewing, because that's all you saw, and maybe you saw a game on Saturday. Most of those games more on Wednesday and Saturday, and that's all you got, except for maybe one other national game.
Chris, you got a few moments on the other side.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. More Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. We'll let you know how you can get all of his information as we continue Thursday edition. Omni, Nashville Post.
Get into the Bill King Show. Shit, man, I just lost my train of thought. All right, dude, here's a couple of phones in 3, 2. Call 615-844-5600.
Chris Landry joins us, LandryFootball.com. Several really good questions we need to get to on Twitter. Chris, Rod, a Buckeye living in Houston, Texas, says, ask Chris, does Deshaun Watson have a future or is his playing days over?
Can't answer that, Rod. I don't know. Only the investigation is going to take us to those answers. The only thing I can comment on, because I don't know what happened, and that's going to determine, you know, let me just say this, that I haven't given it a ton of thought because I'm, you know, so busy preparing and working meetings at the draft. But I did have a conversation because I felt I needed to address it on some of the platforms. And I didn't realize to the degree. So he's got 22 filings against him. But there was another 18 to 20 masseuses that wrote letters saying that they worked on him and there was no problem. Let me explain something, how masseuses were. They are very important in today's world, in the NFL, college. NFL teams will have at least an independent contract with a independent contractor with, say, a masseuse company, maybe two, three, maybe up to half a dozen. Maybe a player will have somebody in his hometown that he lives in the off season, one or two. You got 40 masseuses. That is weird, and is a red flag. That just sends a signal that you're trying to get more out of it than a masseuse. And I just leave it at that. So I don't know all these
things. Hey, Chris, is that the Texans or?
No, that's him.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically added up. If he's got 18, that said, no, 18 to 20, that's 40. I mean, you don't have 40 different, I mean, you have certain people, you normally lack one or two, but you have to have more than one or two, because if you need some work done on you and they're not available. The other thing is, it is pretty common, no snickering out there, it's pretty common these guys really, an important part of the body that needs a lot of work is the groin area. It really is important to increase flexibility, groin pulls and all that. You know, it's just so that's pretty common. You know, since this has happened, they basically, his people have said, you need to have male masseuses doing that from now on. Because it's just, there's just a whole lot of them. That's way too many to, I'm just going to leave it there. I just don't know. It's just, I hope that stuff is not true. And we just got to let it play out. Everything is on hold. The teams that were interested in trading for him can't do anything. Is it going to be on the suspended list? Well, I don't know. You know, just we have to wait and see.
Jeff in Chicago says, Chris, when you were talking about Jodine and TV and the basketball, could you have been talking about Raycom TV back in the day?
Well, Raycom was, you know, I think it was different than Raycom. It could be.
Right.
Jodine was a marketing agent for Converse.
Right.
That's what he did. So, like, you know how before you had Michael Jordan signing Nike, he was that guy. He would he signed Larry Bird and Dr. J and, you know, North Carolina basketball and Dean Smith. It was a different world. That's what he did. And he ended up being on TV. But, yeah, maybe it was. I think it was the old TVF, but I could be wrong. It was whatever it was, whatever the name, it was the Rindoff deal. It very well could be Raycom. I don't know.
Coach's hot seat out in Lake Tahoe says the Alabama spring game is coming up this Saturday. It will be on ESPN, and we'll get to see Bryce Young and Paul Tyson. Chris, you know the coach pretty well from your days back in Cleveland and LSU and all that. Is there really a quarterback battle at Alabama between these two or not? I don't think it is, but I'm not.
Well, yeah, you know, the end result is Bryce is going to be the guy, but there's a process, as you know, that has to take place. If, you know, if the reason there is because he's really good worker, Bill O'Brien has taken a real shine to him and vice versa, and he's got a chance to be special. But the reason why it's never, quote-unquote, it's a done deal, because the reason why he's going to win it is the reason why it's a presumptive thought that he is. If he were to not play well, if he were to regress and not do things, well, then, yeah, you got a problem. So nothing's ever guaranteed until you go out and do it. It's kind of like, well, you know, they're going to win this game. Well, they are, provided they do certain things. So the big thing I always tell folks is, yeah, it's an intriguing thing to look at quarterback battles. I don't really – it's not to me as important about who wins it, but how many guys can you win with? So I don't care who wins the job. Who's the guy that comes in when that guy gets hurt or something happens to him? Because that's what you're playing with, and that's what's going to determine, you know, whether you can get through a game or three games or what have you. So how many guys can you get ready to play winning football, to be able to run your offense, to make all the decisions, make all the plays, make all the throws? That's, to me, what's most important. And in order to do that, you have to have a competitive environment, and you have to let them go. And the end result is going to be somebody's one, somebody's two, and it's going to be Bryce unless something really happens to regress. If it is a problem, then, or if it is an issue, then it's going to be a problem because it means that somebody regressed, injury, what have you, you know. But, you know, I think getting multiple guys ready to go is the key for anybody, including Bama.
Aliquippa Bob, ask Chris what the deciding trait is when he is in a war room on draft day and the topic is trying to decide between two players who are equal in ability. That's a very good question.
Yeah, it is. Depends on the position. So, first of all, you go through one thing. Are they both clean medically? Somebody's not real clean medically, got an issue. Let's say it's a receiver. You've got 14 critical factors for a receiver. You rank them in order 1 to 14. I have always worked on a worksheet. So let's say you've got two guys or four, whatever the case may be. We'll take two. You grade it. You put a grade. You don't just say this guy's better here or there. You got to put a grade on it. So if this receiver's most important criteria, hands, if this guy's got 6'9" hands, the other guy's got 6'4" hands, you know, those are great calculations. You put in order, you put the grade in all the 14 categories. They're prioritized 1 through 14. You add up the number. That's your tiebreaker, because what you're saying is these are the most important characteristics that we look for at that position, and this is how they come out in the most important areas. That is done, should be done, and is done in advance in meetings. If you're arguing about that, that close to the draft, like a day or two, then you haven't done your job prior to that. But that's pretty simple. But there's some other factors like injuries. That's a huge factor. It could be at a certain position. I mean, mental ability to learn is very important, but it's even more important at some positions than others.
This dovetails that question, and it's been a long debate, Chris. I'm sure I've asked you about this numerous times. When it comes down to the best player next on the board or a need, isn't it best or not to always go with the board, the best player? Because if you draft for need, you may be reaching at that spot. True or false?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is true. But it's a ticket to a different level. So there are different grade tiers. So, for example, the grading system I've worked with for 30-plus years, a superstar ability, 7.4 to 7.0 is a grade tier. 6.9 to 6.5 is a grade tier. Well, what is 6.9? It's only two players in this draft in the 7.4 to 7.0 category. In 6.9 to 6.5, I've got 22. I've got two in the 6.9 and 20 in the 6.5. So let's say those top four guys are off the board. You've got now 20 players with 6.5 grades. So player 5 and player 24 are the same grade, Bill. So
right.
You can go, you're basically by definition, if you do your draft board correctly, you set your draft board regardless of need, because you can't make a player better or worse because you need him. It doesn't make them better.
Right.
It's just, you know, so you grade them regardless of need. Then if you do that and you hold to the integrity of setting up your draft board, then you can say, you know what, player 5 to 24, we can go in any direction within that group. We might stack them 5, 6, all the way to 24, but we're okay taking any one of those players. So then you can go with a player of need as long as he's in the same grade plateau. If he's not, and you reach a grade level, that's where you make a mistake. So that's the, well, is it best players? It's an accumulation of both. And you don't gerrymander the grades. You set the board up correctly, and it just makes the sense. Now, the top of the board, what I normally do in the grade categories, quarterbacks are more valuable. But, you know, if you're a team and you're Kansas City and you're probably not going in that direction at a certain spot, you know, you may go with another player at the same grade. So that's, to me, that's how you do it. And, you know, the stacking of it within the same grade, you want to make sure they're in the right order as you see them, but that's where you can start to say, this guy's a little bit priority. Here's the other thing. Not only just need, but if you need a guard, you need a safety, you need a tackle, you need a defensive tackle, look at the position of the draft that you're in. If you're in the first round, what position are you more likely to fill in the second, third, fourth, fifth in this draft? Where is there greater depth at those other positions? You got greater depth at guard in the fourth round, probably ought to go at defensive tackle where there's not a lot of depth this year. So that's why you have a draft board. Visually, you can look and see, you know what? Better get our DT now. We can get our offensive tackle or offensive guard a round or two later. We got a better chance of it. So it is about a game of numbers, because the draft is about identifying players that you want, you like, and then getting as many of them as possible. And most teams, everybody works off a board of about 100 players, not, you know, 400. You know, I have a larger number because I'm having to do it for all of them, all the teams. But teams work with 100, 150 players top on their board.
Couple more, Chris, before the break. Jeff in Chicago is a big IU fan. Obviously, basketball has not been too good for them in recent memory. He says, ask Chris that about the Iowa and IU football opener. Your, just some general thoughts on that coming up here in a couple of months.
Well, you know, it's going to be a better game than most expect. I think Tom's done a great job there. I will be, you know, pretty good as well. I think it'll be competitive. Here's what I do, and after I put the draft to bed, because you mentioned spring, just a little tip, and I'm going to have a little bit more detail on this. After the draft, what I do is, because I have all the tape, access to the practice tape, I will spend about 2 hours on each, as many teams as I can, and I'll look through practice tape from the start to, you know, practice, scrimmage, and then depending on what they do with their spring game, which is normally I may or may not look at that, and I get a real good feel for how a team has progressed because I can look at it sequential, you know, right in one shoot. So what I do is take that and I go back to my film grade notes from last year, and I'm going to have a kind of a breakdown of both of those teams. But I like both of the teams coming in to have a competitive season. I don't know that either one are going to be, you know, top 15-ish, but we'll see. I want to break down that a little bit more detail. And I will, as I'll break down all the teams, you know, May, June, and July as we put the draft to bed.
One more, and then we'll let you know how you can get all of Chris's information. Mike is a big Penn State fan up in New Jersey, but his question is, ask Chris why Devontae Smith seems to be slipping down the draft boards. Is that true?
There's no such thing as slipping. People are just finalizing their draft boards now. So they can't – nobody's slipping. Here's the bottom line. If all these quarterbacks go as high as people think, it's pure numbers. I mean, if you got the first three, maybe first four are quarterbacks, well, everybody that's not a quarterback is going to quote-unquote slip. So, you know, Kyle Pitts, Penei Sewell, Ja'Marr Chase, Devontae – I mean, if you're looking at just the best players, you might see it a little bit differently, but that's just the byproduct of the position. Ja'Marr Chase is likely going to be the first receiver taken, as I felt all along, because of his size. It depends on what you want. Devontae can play X, Z, slot. He's the most versatile guy. To me, he's Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne reincarnated. He's a great player. Doesn't really matter. I don't know where he's going to go. He could go as high as 6. He can go as high as 10. I mean, it depends upon what we're talking about. What are people looking for? So he is in that category of players graded 5 to 24. You know, he's in that group. He is actually 7th on my board. But that doesn't mean that if you've got a chance to take one of the quarterbacks or if you need a corner, that those guys are not going to go higher. So,
hey, Chris, here's the music.
I know we're out of town. Yeah, go ahead. Big news. We're going to be doing a draft show on LandryFootball.com on the Twitch channel, pick by pick. So check that out.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. Appreciate you, Chris. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Take care. All right.
There you go. Mr. Chris Landry.